It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC. America has often had a complicated relationship with the French. A great symbol of our nation, the Statue of Liberty, was a donation from our friends in France. Yet the French have often proved as a target, if we all remember the Freedom Fries fiasco that came from Congress during the buildup to the Iraq War. But best-selling author Sarah Vowell aims to reclaim the reputation of the French in her book Lafayette in the Somewhat United States, in which she examines the Frenchman who played a pivotal role in the founding of our nation, the Marquis de Lafayette. And we welcome Sarah Vowell to the program. Sarah, thanks for being with us today.
Sure thing.
So in the great story we tell of the American Revolution, do the French get shortchanged?
Probably. Yes, they do. I mean, we basically owe them our country. And, I mean, it's weird because normally we're all about giving the French their props. But part of the reason I wrote my book is just simple gratitude, Steve.
We don't have enough of that these days. So speaking of gratitude, what motivated Lafayette to join the revolutionary cause? What was behind his effort to go out of his way to help us out?
There are a few reasons. One of them was he was a 19-year-old boy, and you know how squirrely they are. So he you know, longed for adventure. And also, he came from a military family. I mean, his ancestors fought, going back to the Crusades and Joan of Arc. And so, you know, he grew up longing for battlefield glory. And when he was 19, Europe was annoyingly, to him, at peace. So if you want battlefield glory, you're going to have to find yourself a battle. So the American Revolution was in full swing by 1777. So he wanted to get in the game. And he was also, I mean, he was a country boy and, you know, came from this military tradition. And he was also an orphan, though, because his father died in battle. That's probably another reason he wanted to go fight the British, because the British had killed his father when he was a little boy in the Seven Years' War. So he kind of had a bone to pick with them. He also, you know, it was the Enlightenment, and he was kind of enamored with these ideas and ideals about liberty and equality. So those are some of the reasons.
So he's this fairly well-off teenager that comes to...
Fairly well-off. He's the richest orphan in France.
The richest orphan in France. Quite a catch.
He was huge. His... yeah. So he bought his own ship. When he came to America, he bought his own ship.
Well, it wasn't all that long afterwards that we made him a general. You say that he was looking for battle, so he hadn't been battle-tested, but what kind of military experience did he have to be given a generalship that young?
Well, starting when he was about 11, the last of his parents, his mother, died, and he got put into riding school and sort of military school, and so he had been part of the king's household troops, and you know, he trained with I think three future kings of France. So he actually, even at 19, he sort of had more military training than pretty much most of the Continental Army. I mean, when he shows up in Philadelphia at 19, and the founders begrudgingly give him a commission as a major general, it's kind of an honorific. He's basically a glorified intern at first. Basically, at that point, you know, the founding fathers are trying to shake down the King of France. And because Lafayette has these illustrious connections back to the court at Versailles, they're trying to make nice with him so he will, you know, send back word to his homeland that everyone should cough up some money and gunpowder. But then, I mean, he pretty quickly establishes himself as a gung-ho hard worker. I mean, he sort of latches on to George Washington, and, you know, Washington's troops are kind of deserting him in droves, and here's this kid who is sort of like, put me in, coach. And he's very brave and hardworking and dedicated, and eventually Washington gives him a command of his own division. So even though he's called the general at first, he's not really generaling, but he does grow into that. And he was very beloved by his men. He was very good at, like, rallying people to the cause.
Well, you visited many of the sites of Lafayette's successes and failures in the American Revolution. You went to Brandywine. He was wounded there. And you found out that not everybody is happy with Brandywine being a historical site.
Oh, well, are you referring to my Quaker friends?
Yes, this was a surprising discovery in your book.
One of the things that happened during the Battle of Brandywine, it was sort of spread out across the Brandywine Valley a bit, is that the battle kind of spilled over onto the grounds of a Quaker meeting house, which is still there and is still a Quaker meeting house. And it's kind of a faux pas when people kill each other. I mean, in general, that's a faux pas, but especially on, like, in a Quaker churchyard. They wouldn't call it a church, I guess. But so I went there the day of the big Battle of Brandywine reenactment and stopped by that church because, you know, the battle had partly taken place there. And there's a monument to Lafayette in the cemetery next door, and was kind of sort of ambushed by these Quakers who are just hanging around waiting for war buffs who were there to see the reenactment down the road. And they're just kind of hanging out, waiting to pounce on people and to talk to them about nonviolence, which, you know, there are worse things to talk about. And, I mean, they do have a point. I mean, I told them what I was doing and that I was writing this book about the war. And then, you know, they were like, oh, the war. All the books in the history section at the bookstore, it's all about war. And, I mean, they do kind of have a point. It's, you know, probably why the History Channel is called the Hitler Channel. And I think, I mean, I included them in the book and let them have their say because I think we should all maybe keep questioning our excitement about state-sponsored violence, you know. So it was interesting to talk to them. I mean, they were really informative. I mean, I found this out, like, my last book was about the history of Hawaii, and I found the most disgruntled Native Hawaiians who are still upset about Hawaii being a part of the United States, they were the most informative when I was doing my research. I learned the most from them. Like, people who have a bone to pick with history are often the most educational.
We're talking with Sarah Vowell. Her latest book is called Lafayette in the Somewhat United States. Well, you mentioned state-sponsored violence. It wasn't just the enthusiasm that Lafayette provided for the Revolutionary War cause and his military leadership as it evolved, but also, as you alluded to, it was his connections. He was instrumental in convincing the King of France to provide money for the revolutionaries.
Money, soldiers, sailors, his army, his navy, gunpowder, which the Patriots were sorely lacking in gunpowder, which is pretty handy in an 18th century war. I mean, basically, I mean, when the French, I mean, they were kind of helping surreptitiously all along, mostly because the French just hated the British because they were still kind of licking their wounds from the Seven Years' War, or as we call it, the French and Indian War. So the French government just hated, I mean, there was just this centuries-long animosity between Britain and France. So they were kind of helping the Patriots on the sly from the beginning. But then in 1778, they signed an official treaty of alliance, and that turns the tide of the war. And the King of France sends his army and his navy to help out the Continental Army, and they're there at Yorktown. There are more French soldiers and sailors fighting at Yorktown than there are Americans, and that was kind of the climax of the war. So it really, having France's help, that made the difference. I mean, not to diminish the long suffering and perseverance of Washington and his troops, but no one was more excited about the French alliance than the soldiers at Valley Forge. When they got the news, they put on a military parade and yelled, "Long live the King of France." I mean, at one point when Rochambeau, the French general that comes over from France, he lends Washington some money so he can pay his guys. And some of them, that's the only payment they got for the whole war, you know. So our soldiers, even if we've forgotten our debt of gratitude to the French, the Continental soldiers were forever beholden. Not that it wasn't not that it was a completely rosy alliance the whole time. I mean, they were still French. I mean, like, some of that was so funny to me. Like, the, you know, these Frenchmen, they come over, and one of them in his journal, he writes about going to dinner in George Washington's tent, and he is amazed, like, Washington feeds them their food all on the same plate, you know, like they're animals. Like, these people are animals who, there are no courses, you know, it's just all like slopped together on one plate. I'm just supposed to eat this. So there are some like humorous aspects of that alliance. I mean, one other, like a page, all the Americans keep talking to this young page like he's a general because his duds are so fancy. They just assume, you know, this kid is in charge, but it's really only because he's wearing velvet.
That's probably what helped Lafayette out so much. He came over well-dressed.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he definitely cut a swashbuckling figure. It's funny. I mean, I'm joking around, but actually, like, clothes and shoes were kind of a big sticking point in this war. And, you know, these poor, naked, penniless Continentals, like, the great image of the march to Valley Forge is the bloody footprints in the snow because these guys didn't have shoes, you know. And so, like, shoes are important when you're walking across Pennsylvania in December. So that contrast between these patriots in rags and their French comrades was marked. And the French actually couldn't, when they started fighting with these guys, they were all just amazed by how stalwart these naked wretches were once they got into battle. You know, there was a definite respect.
Well, when the French were helping out in this foreign war that was, I guess, a war of choice for them, things didn't work out so great in France. Around that time, a few years later, the people were a bit upset. How did the French pay for their involvement and their help in the American Revolution? How did they actually pay the bills?
I mean, some of them, especially the King of France, paid for it with his head. You know, I mean, they were already, I mean, that's how much the King of France hated the King of England. I mean, they were already broke. They were still broke from the Seven Years' War, and they did not have the money at all. I mean, one of his finance guys is like, we can't pay for this. I love these guys. Franklin's the best, but you just don't have the cash. And they still kept giving. And every time the Americans asked, the French kept giving more and more money, more and more gunpowder, sending more and more supplies and ships. And, I mean, they were already bankrupt, and it, like, completely bankrupted them. It was one of the contributing factors of the revolution was everyone was broke. Everyone was starving. I mean, the great image of the French Revolution is the mothers marching to Versailles because there isn't any bread. And when there is, they can't pay for it. And so it's what cost the King of France his throne, and it cost him and his wife their lives. And it's serious, you know. Yeah. I mean, besides the fact that because of the money, but also the revolutionary idea completely inspired the masses of France. But it sort of inspired a lot of them to madness and mass murder. Oh, look, we're out of time.
Well, I always like to end on
a note to end on.
I always love to end on a happy note, Sarah.
The book
is called Lafayette and the Somewhat United States. I'd like to express my thanks to the King of France. You know, it worked out well for us.
Thank you, too, if he still had a head.
Yeah. Sarah Vowell, thanks for being with us this morning.
Bye.
Bye. It's the Steve Fast Show on WJBC.